You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. So here's what Lacrosse has recently done. They've taken their 100 plus years of experience to create a new line of lace-up hunting boots called the Navigator Series. Now, the Navigator Series comes in two options, the Atlas for men and the Windrose for both men and women. Now, if you want to find out more about their high-quality awesome boots, you need to go to lacrossefootwear.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith. We're co-owners of a consulting company called, go figure, Land and Legacy. This is your number one podcast resource for all things land.
Each week, we're breaking down topics from land management, habitat management, conservation, farming practices, and real estate. We hope you guys enjoy it. What's up, everybody? This is Matt, your host of Land Legacy Podcast this week. Man alive. I can't tell you how excited I am. It is currently August 25th. Tennessee just opened up, had a special three-day season, and our season opens in about 20 days. We are on the property a lot this week. So be sure to be looking on social media for a lot of updates on what we're seeing, kind of putting the finishing touches on our season. I know a lot of other states, like let's say Wyoming, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kentucky, Georgia, y'all's openers are definitely approaching even more rapidly than ours. So a lot of people out there are getting ready for season, putting on their finishing touches just like us. So hope you guys are ready for a great podcast this week. We've got Seth Harker coming on to talk about hunting strategy, and just learning deer, what he's doing on his property to capitalize on past year's deer movement and activity, kind of a little push and a little surge for this upcoming deer season. And of course, we're going to talk about everything, probably some food plot updates, getting the hunting strategy for early, middle, and late deer season, probably even touch on some trail camera techniques as well. So all sorts of things that our guy's going to get you excited and ready. So hope you guys are ready for another great podcast. Just want to say thank you so much again for listening. It is a pleasure to bring podcast to you guys every single week. Appreciate all the feedback that you guys have week in and week out, whether it's on social media, Facebook, Instagram, on YouTube. A lot of YouTube videos coming out. I'm trying to put out as many as we can, leading up the season, as well as throughout the season as we're actually in the field talking strategy and talking the management techniques that we've used in the past and how they're going to affect us during deer season as we're actually hunting and getting time in the stand. And then soon enough, we're going to be looking and staring, if you will, consulting season right in the face, which on a side note of that too, we're having a lot of inquiries come through in preparation for after deer season. So if you guys are interested or kind of thinking, pondering, consulting options, we do encourage you to email in now. We're getting booked up and we want to make sure that we're able to reach as many people as we can. So be sure we've got trips scheduled to Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky, Virginia, probably Nebraska and Georgia, several states already locked in. So if you guys are thinking about it, we can hopefully bundle some trips up together and kind of save everybody some time and make sure, again, we hit as many people as we can. So guys, thank you again so much. Hope you enjoy this podcast. Sit back and reach out again if you got any questions. Info at Land and Legacy or across all of our social media handles. All right, Seth, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, man. Well, I know everyone's probably jacked up to hear some more Seth stories and just talk deer hunting strategy because it's that time of the year. It's late August. Season is just around the corner, and we have been texting back and forth. I know you and Adam have been texting back and forth, sharing deer pictures and just really trying to put an understanding on season and our expectations and plans, strategy revolving around season because it's it's pretty much here. I'm just going to say it's here because this is all part of season to me. This is the build-up, the anticipation, and the energy, the thoughts that go into it. So are you pumped?
I am pumped. I'm ready. It's becoming a reality, and the Velvet Deer are finishing out, and that just gets my heart pumping. I'm ready to get in the stand.
We actually had a deer show up this morning on camera. He had shed.
Yeah, same thing.
Same thing.
I just
really
checked the camera.
Yep.
Same thing. Hard horn 10 point. Sure enough.
This was a hard horned 8 pointer, and he's been in one of the bigger bachelor groups, and it's like, hey, that deer is shed velvet. And yesterday was a pretty cool day around here. Same thing in your neck of the woods. And it just kind of felt like, man, seasons, it's got to be getting here. It's got to be getting close. And then seeing that first hard horn picture was like, oh, man, yep, it's definitely coming.
Yep, hard horn pictures. And then weather for August is just beautiful, cool, and
yes.
Got my neck swelling for sure.
You just turned into part deer. Well, real quick, before we dive into some of the strategy behind, and hopefully it'll be a good little segue, but before we dive into the Bucks strategy, give us a little update on your food plots from the summer, because people have heard us talk about the Stratton plots, the Heritage, the Game Changers, everything that we've been planting. We've had a spectacular growing season. You're 30 miles north of us, and have caught a lot of the same rains or similar rain schedule. We've been really blessed with an awesome growing season. So catch us up a little bit on a food plot update, and somehow that's going to tie us into the strategy behind these deer. But how are your food plots looking?
Looking great. First year, I might add, for the Heritage blend, mm-hmm. and I'm falling in love with it like most people that are planting it are, for sure. Just the diversity in it. The deer absolutely pound it. In fact, I've spent a lot of summer evenings watching some of our hit list bucks in the Heritage.
Mm-hmm.
The sunflowers are starting to pop. The sun hemp's going. Soybeans are beautiful inside of it. The peas are doing their thing, chasing the sun hemp up. Now it's getting to that really thick screening stage. Just the benefits seem to be just endless with it, and I'm really loving it. And as you and I talked earlier, you can do all different kinds of things, whether you spray it with colephidone to kill the grasses and release the broadleafs, the soybeans, and the peas.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can terminate the whole thing in the fall and plant some sort of a fall blend. And just the benefits of the health soil. It's got buckwheat in it, too, that turkeys mm-hmm. love the seeds off of. Milo, I mean, my goodness.
It seems endless.
It is, and I never thought that I would... You know me, I've always been a soybean and corn guy.
Right. Right.
And don't get me wrong, I like the Game Changer. And I've got several acres of that with corn. And I like those too, but I don't have a bad thing to say about the Heritage blend. One thing I think too, and what I've heard from you and Adam, I really think it's going to thrive in drier years.
Yes. Even more so. I think right what we're seeing this year, and last year it was certainly full, you know the base of the stand, if you will, let's say from ground level up to about waist high, it was full. But this year it is very thick, and we didn't experience
right.
that as much last year because it was drier. Some of the species that did better in the drier conditions, like the sun hemp, like the milo, like the millet, those grew, you know, very vertical, very much quicker, and didn't fill out like the clay peas and the soybeans did. And I say didn't fill out. This is let's say respective to this growing season, where it's a jungle in there. You can't hardly walk through because there's so much vining, so many broadleafs, soybeans, clay peas. And now we're at the point in the growing season where the sun hemp is for us, it was chest high for me yesterday and some sprouts over my head right now. But they're going to climb on up and get to 9 to 10 foot tall in amongst this thick vegetation that's waist to chest high. And so it turns into an incredible screen if you choose to leave it. It's so
right.
You can use it for so many different things.
And, you know, that brings up a good point because that's what I planted it for.
Talk a little bit about where you planted it and what you wanted it to achieve, because it's been you planted it in an area that's been a little bit like, I don't really know what I want to do. I don't want to just devote it to straight food. It's right along a highway, basically.
Right. Yeah, so it's right along a major highway. And as you struggled with and mentioned earlier, rain was terrible to get into our bottom fields. Mm-hmm. We've just had so much rain. So we got a late planting on it. And I've got one middle field that stands full of water. And I will say that that's probably the weaker of the three fields.
Sure.
But the east and west field, it's doing what it's supposed to do. And it is screening. The sun hemp is just screaming. And I planted it with screening in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got a big job going where I pass it.
Sure.
And man, every time I would go by there, I would see deer in it. And I'm like, good grief, they're just loving that. And then, you know, all the neighbors were calling, dude, there are some nice, this was before it was really getting up there high.
Yeah.
Man, there's some nice bucks in those fields. I'm like, really? So then I'm going and watching, and I'm watching it grow, and the deer are just utilizing it. And I really think that it's great for antler growth. And
yeah,
there again, it's great for grazing pressure. And I think this is where this blend may really shine, is in where people have struggled in smaller plots
mm-hmm.
to plant standalone soybeans.
Most definitely.
I think that the heritage is going to compensate for that. And they're going to have a green food source where they're getting trail cam pictures. And then back to what we talked about, they can either release it with a herbicide, specific herbicide, or terminate it. And they've done the soil great and plant a fall plot. But either way, they're always having food available and the deer in the area. The possibilities are endless with it.
Yeah. With a glyphosate-tolerant bean in this blend, you spray glyphosate over top of you're releasing the beans, but if then you choose, say, hey, you know what, actually I want to keep all the broadleaves in there, you can come in with clethodim, grass specific herbicide, and just release all the broadleaves and choose to either overseed a fall blend over top of all the broadleaves or just soybeans. But in these plots, now these fields you're talking about are quite a bit bigger, but we've got Heritage doing extremely well in quarter to three-quarter acre food plots in the timber.
Wow.
And we've got pods growing in this blend, and if we so choose to just spray everything out, we're gonna have standing beans and pods in the timber plots, quarter to half, three-quarter acre plots, and we're golden. And now we're gonna have greens
wow.
underneath of all that, with all that vegetation, as whether it's thatch, building soil as it's breaking down over time. It's pretty incredible. And I think you have to go through a whole full growing season from planting, from germination all the way to termination, however you so choose, to really understand, wow, all the things that blend can give for you, for the wildlife, the soil, everything.
Right. Interesting. One of my good buddies, he had planted, I think he had planted a 2-acre field somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
And interestingly enough, he had sent me a picture of it, and he got it in earlier than what we got to get ours in.
Right.
The cattle got into it.
Uh-huh.
It was up between knee and waist high, and the neighbor's cattle got into it. And he sent me a picture of it, and the picture said, well, there goes the heritage. Today he sent me pictures. It came back,
yeah.
And he goes, what are these? And it was pea pods in his hand that the peas were probably looked like the pods were 7-8 inches.
Oh, they're long.
That's what they were.
Yeah, they're very, very long. Those pods.
That was after the cattle. I'm telling you, the cattle wiped it to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing it goes back to is why we preach diversity is because imagine if that was just a monoculture of soybeans, they wiped it out to the ground and it gets super, super dry. You don't get rain during the summer. That's pretty much it. It's pretty much done. But now that you've got diversity, you've got all these forages that can help shade and lean on one another. You got some that do better when you get a lot of rain, some that do better if it gets super dry. You're not just getting, you know, completely wiped out and you're done. You've got all this opportunity in different forages to then grow and basically salvage what would be a catastrophic event for most people in food plots. He's still doing all right.
Right. Definitely a super blend. Another thing, too, is, and I know you guys are really getting into using less herbicides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff goes so quick and blows out of the ground.
Yeah.
There's, in my bean fields and, you know, in corn, there's always, I always have to spray.
Sure.
Once or twice throughout the growing season, depending on the rainfall and how things are going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't see you having to spray. I mean, you know, Heritage, it's going to get up there and it's shading out, and then the diversity takes off and does its thing.
Well, that's why that balance of you know, or one of the reasons why we have buckwheat in there is because it jumps out of the ground. Like it's a broadleaf and it helps to jump out quickly. And it puts off four leaves in a spherical pattern, basically, and helps the shade produce a little tiny canopy really quickly. Then everything else comes up underneath of it, and you know, before you know it, you're a week and a half into this, and the ground's covered. Like you're done. That was the only chance that a weed had really to grow, unless you have extreme browse pressure, and the deer continuing to open it up. But we have not found that yet in our area, where the deer have been able to keep up with the amount of growth and diversity in the plot. So it's been awesome. Shoot, we could talk about the Stinking Heritage blend probably for a whole podcast.
No doubt. It is a super plot.
Yeah. Well, I know you experimented this year. I believe it was with the Bonafide blend as well, which was a corn and soybean mix. Is that right?
Yep. That's what we've...
New thing for Stratton this year. So you're kind of, you're a little bit of a guinea pig here for that.
Right. And we love it. And there again, the reason we do is because our deer densities are so high, the corn helps. There again, you're into not just, we've got two species is better than one. And obviously we're seeing that even with soybeans and corn.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowing the corn to shade some of the beans. The way deer graze around it, you know, there may be four corn plants with a couple bean plants in the mix. The deer don't graze those. They graze the ones around it. Well, then they pop out of the corn. They hit those and then the other ones and kind of catch up and you're back to more of an even playing field. And that's exactly what's happening for us.
It's weird. There's like this invisible like utilization cage around each corn stalk is what we've seen. And it's like it's like a foot and a half outside of each corn stalk. They're like, the deer just does not go in there and browse those beans. So it's weird. It's like this little column around the corn stalk and everything else is browsed around it. But what it helps is those areas, let's say if you have an intense browse pressure, you know, somewhere in there, you're going to have corn, and then in and around the corn stalks as well, you're going to have a lot of bean pods as well.
Right. Yeah, it's great. And for those who, I'd just like to add this, it is a grazing bean. I'm tired of hearing that it's not a grazing bean. You hear a lot of other competitors, well, they said it's a grazing bean and it's not. And A brand is the only grazing bean. And we all know which one I'm talking about. Stratton Game Changer bean is a grazing tolerant soybean, period. Plant them, watch them graze it, watch it regrow. It's a fact.
Yeah. It will withstand. Well, shoot. Yesterday, Chad and I put out a ghillie blind at the end of a little dozer deck overlooking a plot that's about an acre and 2/10 or so. And those beans were planted, and this was a monoculture of soybeans. We had this is the second year after it was dosed, just straight ridge top. So we want to make sure we had weed pressure down. So we planted just the Game Changer 2.0s, planted that, and during the middle of July, we were shin high. I mean, these beans were getting browsed. I mean, hit hard. Right now, we are in the plot yesterday. It is waist high, full of pods, full of blooms, little different stages there in the maturity of it. But the entire plot is waist high now. It's like we got a touch dry at that point. Just after being planted there between that transition of June into July. And then we got rain.
Right.
And these beans just absolutely just took off. And we're waist high right now. We're like, we did not at all expect that to happen. Not one bit.
So come on, a little bit of snow and keep the acorn crop low.
Yeah. If that's the case, it's going to be nasty, nasty in some of these food plots. You know, let's take that transition into preparations for this September. But what we've seen in our timber is I've seen a few chinkapin oaks, which is the white oak family, have acorns on them. But when we're talking white oak, you're just run of the mill generic white oak. Everyone knows what we're talking about. I have seen very few, if any, on trees, and I'm sitting back saying, oh my gosh, we've got food plots have never looked better. We don't have the white oak acorn crop. If we get decent weather in September and the first part of October, I know for a fact these deer are going to be on food plots, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And, I mean, even during the rut, if we don't have acorns, those doe family groups, they're going to be around the Stratton field. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. I guarantee it. I know there's a few black oaks this year from what we've seen and some red oaks, but that they're going to happen every single year or pretty much close to it. So it's just part of it. But luckily I think the very beginning of the season, I'm optimistic, let's say, at the beginning, the opening, let's say, first 4 weeks of season, we ought to be in some very bucky areas, we'll say.
I'm my neck's swelling even more.
Just as we speak. Well, Seth, you've got some deer and some strategy to talk with us today about. As everyone knows, you've been extremely successful in your hunting career of harvesting deer. You know, every single year, filling tags, and obviously that's based on from property management all the way to just being a good woodsman and just understanding what deer do, what they need, and putting together that with property management and developing these awesome hunting strategies. But first, that hunting strategy is based around the actual behavior of the individual deer from the past years or previous years that you studied and watch these deer do what they do. So that leads us into a couple deer that you're watching this year that, those are the deer that I'm going to chase. And I'll let you name those deer and then say, why, because I don't know if it's necessarily based on, let's say score, but more or less of the ability to hunt them based on the patterns that you've seen them do over the past couple of years. So I'll let you take it.
So we've got Frank the Tank, which is a beautiful, beautiful 9-point, good brows, good mass, 2s, 3s, Southern Missouri, just a beautiful Southern Missouri deer. Interesting strategy with him. We followed Frank the Tank for probably really got on the radar last year. And this year, whether it was the rainfall or what, in our Stratton field, I'm not sure, but he put on, he's going to be in the mid 40s, probably upper 40s, 42, 43 is my guess. Just a nice deer. We've got cameras on the end of a 6 to 7 acre clover field on each end. And we've got corn and soybean mix on the north and the south side. So it's like a big runway of clover right down the middle.
Gotcha.
We are, the strategy for this deer, well, it just actually hit me the other night. I'm like, man, I've got a good chance to kill that deer.
Mm-hmm.
He's showing up on either one of those cameras throughout the night, sometimes in daylight.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure he's coming from a clear cut that we put in several years ago. And, well, you've seen it. It's head high. It's just a clear cut. And then we also had ran fire through there, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm pretty sure that's where he's coming from. I'm not 100% sure because, as you know, the bedding area is endless possibilities.
Right.
On the property.
That's the closest bedding resource. And, you know, he consistently comes from that direction. But it's like, how far off that field is he? Because that
right.
clear cut, there's a lot of other bedding opportunities close by that kind of bleed out from it. That it's like, well, he could technically be bedded there too.
Exactly. So that's kind of the million-dollar question. So, and I didn't intend for this to happen, and this just goes to show you how we learn over the years, and we're going to see how it works. But on the east end of the field, we have a gun stand / really the reason I put it there when I put it there was for observation.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan for Frank the Tank this year is to observe him. Our season opens September 15th. And the plan is to spend several nights when the wind's right. Keep in mind, I have a corn hallway to the stairway of the redneck blind.
Yeah.
Where I can get in and out. If I get a good westerly wind,
mm-hmm.
Preferably southwest, because I believe he's coming from the south. Several winds. I'm planning on spending some time, and I know a lot of people are probably raising their eyebrows. You're going to go in there before season? Well, it's just the right spot to do it in. We've set it up. We can
sure.
park. We can walk. We're not going to disturb deer. We've got a corn screen. Stratton beans are about ready to be a screen too because they're getting up their chest high. So
right.
they're growing above the corn stalks. But we've got this access in here. So the plan is to get in there and glass him several nights and figuring out his preferred entry into that clover field that's in the center of this corn. I'll probably take the scratch pad with me, the notepad. I'll document the winds. And I'll probably do it a good 2 weeks before our opener, so I need to get started. But
sure.
If I can pin him down, my plan is to take the bush hog in there, because I know he's going to the clover, and brush hog just a nice little food plot right on his travel route into that clover.
Sure.
And that I is think it's going to be dynamite.
That's a legal technique here in Missouri. Some states, I'm not sure if you can brush hog corn like that, but here you certainly can, and it's a fantastic. People always think corn is just a late season food source, but man, there's times when it's gotten super super dry right as season's opening up. You've got deer eating corn off the corn stalk, and you brush hog down, and it's just an automatic, just boom, dynamite location deer. You're just concentrating deer into.
Right. And you and I have actually had a hunt like that.
Yeah, with Trace, your son.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we were beautiful hunt. I mean, it was just the exact canvas you just spoke dry, and the corn just worked. Not only that, when that corn is in a more of a moist, sweeter stage and you hit it with a brush hog, they seem to just really key in on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the dry corn that you're going to get that's set in a barn and dry that you may get at your local feed store.
Sure.
You know,
it's completely different. This is still on the ear, you know, it's a different ball game. There's still a lot of
right.
moisture. It's not like, you know, a combine's, you know, sitting here ready to combine the corn. It's not dried out. as you would. It's not ready if it was being harvested to be harvested for, you know, a seed crop. That's not the case here. It's a different moisture levels. But like you said, a lot of people are probably thinking you're telling me like 3 days, 4 days before season, you're going to go to exactly where he's coming through that corn, entering in the clover, and you're going to create a large disturbance in there. Like, am I hearing him correctly?
Right. And we've set it up to where, we've set it up like we want all of our stands to be. That's just not going to happen. We want all of our stands to have such good access that we can get in them and get out of them without really having a negative effect on the whitetails we're hunting. Mm-hmm. Truth of the matter is, some of the best sites and spots that I would like to hunt, they have zero access to them. So guess what? I don't hunt them. I used to.
Right.
I used to waste a lot of time, and what I did was educated deer.
Sure. And that's a hard lesson to learn. That's such a hard, tough, difficult, usually frustrating lesson to learn. But once you get to that point and realize I've done more harm than good, and here's my, I guess, line of thinking for that. And we address this all the time when we're walking a client's property is, listen, these deer, they've got four legs. So what that means is, yeah, you can hunt them here and they're walking here. Your trail camera is picking them up here. But that doesn't mean you need to hunt them here. They've got four legs. They're going to walk elsewhere. So let's find another place right. where they're walking and transition that has access. Because this right now is off limits. We can't do that. You're just going to frustrate yourself.
Right. Yep. So that's kind of the plan on him. And I'm not going to get into the baiting debate, if you will. It's legal to brush hog corn. And truth of the matter is, we're putting in a lot of hard work with what we've planted. And we're also putting in a lot of hard scouting work, trying to figure out exactly where to intercept that deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no doubt.
It's no different me making rounds with that brush hog than it is me making rounds with a drill and drilling.
Yeah, I mean, you put in the work. You've drilled that corn. It's a heck of a technique. Where in your state, if it's legal and you haven't done it before, you haven't tried it before, well, I think Seth is your man to reach out to and you know, hey, do you think it would work here? Yeah, probably would work. Probably would work really well from the success you've seen from it. But yeah, we'll have to get out there with that Vortex spotting scope and just sit back and kind of watch things develop. And that's the other thing. I think, Seth, we've had this debate before. It's a slight rabbit trail here, but the value that trail cameras have in learning where deer are in their general location. A trail camera, I think we have to remember, just like a foothold trap, it is a stationary trap where you are documenting
exactly.
a deer walking past. Just because a deer does not show up on your trail camera every single day does not mean that deer is not in that area every single day. He still could be on a pattern working this food source, but you know, a lot of states, I'm going to say it, I think we're going to see a big change over the next 10 years, let's say, in no baiting, period, and no minerals in a lot of states. And that's where a lot of people, I think, you know, documenting bucks or deer with trail cameras is, I'm trying to get them every day because they're come to this other attraction that's out in front of my trail camera. Well, gosh, we don't, most of the attraction that's in front of a trail camera is overlooking a large food plot for us, or it's a scrape during deer season. I don't need to see that deer every single day to know that he's in that area. And if you're a good woodsman, you're going to figure out how to hunt that area and how to hunt, you know, figure out where they're walking to and from and get there. And if he's there, you know, let's say in a given week, that's 7 days possible. If he's there three or four times, there's a really, really strong chance you're going to see them when you go in there and hunt under the right conditions.
Right. And with that being said, trail cameras have sure helped us kill a lot of deer.
Oh, absolutely.
Trail cameras have sure saved a lot of deer.
Yes.
Because people think, oh, I didn't get – I had pictures of him Friday, but I didn't have pictures of him. He wasn't on the food plot again until Thursday or whatever the case may be. And I'm telling you, I've had three cameras on an acre food plot, on a late season food plot, and I have watched some of mature deer. They weren't my target deer at the time. I've watched them avoid all three shell cameras. And it's not that they were meaning to. Sure, there's some deer who avoid them. These deer just didn't walk that path. I'd had plenty of pictures of the deer.
Sure.
But they walked in that acre food plot, and they didn't walk in front of any one of those trail cameras. Guess what? They were in bow range.
Mm-hmm. Your trail cameras would have told you that that was a spot that, let's say, immature deer or just does were showing up to, but truthfully, an observation and a physical presence seen more than what the trail cameras were telling you said, holy cow, Seth, there's mature deer moving during daylight hours right here within shooting range.
Right.
I think we have to definitely keep that in mind every single year, for sure.
For sure. For sure. So that's our early season. And I don't know a lot about, to get back on Frank the Tank, just hit me. I don't know a lot about Frank the Tank. I don't. So one of two things is going to happen with him. We're either going to, our strategy is going to work, and we're going to pound him, here early season, or it's going to do like a lot of our deer have done. And this is just going to be the beginning. It's going to start. The hunt for him is going to start. I'm going to start gathering information because I'm gathering information about him right now.
Right.
And I'm either going to make the right decisions and we're not going to have to gather a lot more information because we're going to be ground checking him, or it's really going to take off like it is with Whiplash, which is a deer that I've hunted for and known for years. In fact, I've known this deer since he was a spike.
Wow. What identifying feature? What identifying feature did he have?
He is missing three quarters. Not three quarters. Probably a 3/4 inch wide by 2 inch deep piece of his ear.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Always has. And with that being said, back on the trail cameras, not to go back down that trail. Anytime you have a button buck, anytime you have a spike, if you can find the defined feature, save that image away.
Sure.
Maybe he has a weak eye in one side. Mm-hmm. You know, we all see the glow in the night. Some deer have a weak left or a right eye. You know, some deer have a notch. Some deer have a double throat patch. Whatever the case may be. If there is a defining feature on a young deer that's going to stay with him, one that's going to stay with him, save that picture away. And that's actually what I had done with Whiplash. I saved it away.
Right.
And he went from a spike as a little basket 8 points the next year, little basket case. Probably wouldn't score 50 inches. And then the next year he went to probably 100 and – as a 3-year-old, 110-inch 9-point. And then last year, he went to probably going to bump 140s as a 9-point. I shouldn't say. Probably my guess would be 140. He would have been at 140.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he's just a beautiful 10-point. And we're going to go after him.
Sure. Absolutely. What is the strategy kind of behind him? You know, being able to identify that deer for so long, what are the key points that you've picked up on him? And where do you anticipate, or what time of the year and where do you anticipate basically saying, that's the deer we're going after right now because he does this or he's in this area that's just very huntable every single year?
Right. So back to the notch in his ear and following him. So that is why this was such valuable information, because I got to see this deer from the time he was 1 year old to 5 years old. So I was gathering information, and I per se wasn't like planning on hunting this deer, but when I would see the deer with the defined notch, I'd be like, huh, he's over there. Yes. And it always would hit me, oh, he's over there.
Certainly.
Oh, in December, he's over there. And then I just kind of kept following the deer.
Sure.
Excuse me, he's a six-year-old. There was another year in there I missed. He's a six-year-old because I forgot I found sheds off of him. But anyways, back to the story. I'd missed a year in there. So I just kept following the deer. And every time I would see him, even when he wasn't old enough that you wouldn't want to shoot him, I just kept putting the pieces together, and I kept patterning the deer. I got to where I knew where he liked to spend time during early season, mm-hmm. which that took me – I did not figure that out until last year. Interestingly enough, I never had a velvet picture of him until
wow.
last year. It took me several years. The first time I discovered him would have been in December. And I logged the picture away. The second year, December. The third year, December. And then last year, I really started, or the year before, I really started putting him in a different piece of the property. And I was like, man, I'm getting pictures of him on this scrape, this scrape, this scrape. And I was like, where is that deer bedding?
Right.
So last year I went and bumped a camera next to where I thought he was bedding. First night, it would have been July, the first evening, I got pictures of him.
Oh, wow. Kind of blitzed the area a little
this
bit.
This year, this is where I got pictures, bumping right to his bedding area. Keep in mind, back to the cameras, I probably had trail cameras within 200 yards of this particular camera that I keep track of him during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So last year's information, combined with all the other December information, so what I've put together over the years where he likes to spend the summer. I've got his summer range semi down.
Right.
At least enough where I know I'm in the area. And then I logged fall range. I took the information from all my December, January information, and I have made a pattern from early, mid, to late.
Right.
So with that being said, what's interesting about that, I can apply a strategy now. In fact, I was down checking the camera next to his bedding area the other day. I can apply a strategy. This doesn't always happen. I can apply a strategy for every single phase that I have to hunt.
Right, right. Early, middle, and late.
I have a strategy. If I really want to get in after and hunt this deer, and I will, my percentages are going up. It's not just luck.
Right.
My percentages are going up because now, after all the years of information that I've gathered, my stands are going to be in better spots to intercept whiplash with all of the information that I've gathered over the last several years.
So break that down real quick from early, middle to late. What is the strategy early season? What do you think, what food plot or what food resource do you think he's going to be utilizing there? How do you anticipate capitalizing on him during the early season, then go through to late season?
Right. So we have a series of small hidden food plots that are tucked in that should be planted actually starting tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Weather permitting, we're going to be planting tomorrow. These are hidden food plots next to this particular bedding ridge. So that's where we're going to key on him early, is definitely around those hidden kill plots. That's going to be a necessity. Back to what we just talked about. One of the best spots to kill that deer is a terrible, absolutely terrible entry route. Terrible.
Yeah.
I have tried to hunt it in the 5-6 years ago. It's absolutely a train wreck. It has a creek that runs to it. The wind swirls, struggled in the past. It kind of has a couple of hollows that make a turkey foot.
Mm-hmm.
However, I had set a buddy there years ago with a easterly wind, and he shot a big, nice mid-40s. This was years ago. At this particular ridge, since then we've tucked the food plot in there. Why? It's just one of those spots you put the camera down, man, where, and you put it up on the side of this ridge here where the little hidey hole or the little hidden food plot is, and you just smash pictures. Yeah. I mean, all the time,
right.
Midday, daylight, evening, they're mm-hmm. moving through. And you want to hunt it, but so that's where we are on that. So early season, there's another farther food plot up on the top. Guess what? We can get in, we can hunt it, but daylight activity is not as good as the one down closer to his bedding area.
Sure.
So it's a coin toss. What do we want to do? Do we want to push the envelope early?
Right.
So as that merges into October, and he could possibly, he hasn't ever really started making his rounds to the buffet until, you know where the buffet is at,
yep.
Until about mid-October, when they really start getting stretching their legs a little bit.
Sure.
For whatever reason, he'll start heading up to the buffet, and he'll start making a round through there. Not only making a round through there, he just starts utilizing the food plot, which blows my mind. Because the reason it blows my mind, because you're talking clover and alfalfa mix in this particular food plot. It's been established for years. In fact, I've thought about terminating it and doing something else, but it just always thrives. That deer will not show up into that food plot, as far as I know, picture-wise, until mid-October.
Mm-hmm.
He will not. Where I'm getting pictures of him in his bedding area is 200 yards away.
Isn't that crazy?
When October hits, he'll be in it frequently. In fact, that's where I found his horns fall off from
mm-hmm.
October to...
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of the information. So as October creeps in, I've got him in a series of bedding areas, ridges, and I've pinpointed that on scrape lines.
Right.
In fact, I was going through the computers the other day and going through from the time he was a youngster to now, and from about November 1st, he's done it every year. And I think this is really important. From about November 1st to November 11th, there is a key ridge with key three scrapes on it, and he has never missed a November, ever.
He's been on them. I think that is a big deal from an information standpoint of, and we talked about it a little bit pre-show, but if you want to find out which deer are in a given area, and again, you may not document them every single day, which is fine, but we need to know which deer are in the area, is to find the most active scrape when they begin to really scrape.
Yeah.
Find the active scrape that they're going to work during the rut. Which ones are they routinely checking, and monitor that with a trail camera, because that
yes.
is like the signpost, the signal area where every deer wants to come to and communicate. We're going to be switching a lot of trail cameras over from field monitoring over into just our predominant scrapes on every single ridge, or the saddles, the main thoroughfares throughout the property. They will be transitioned over here very soon when the scrapes start to open up, because that's where we know if a deer is working an area, he's going to be there. And then from that point on, we know where we can hunt and where we can't hunt. And I think that's kind of similar to you and your area, your topography is, once I know where that deer's at and I've got the history of him, I know when he's most frequenting that, and when just typically more deer are on their feet, I can hunt that. I can be there.
Right.
I've got years of experience of knowing he will be there. I don't need to see him every single day, because at that point, too, they're running around like a chicken with their head cut off. They're not necessarily on deer trails. They're moving with the wind every single day. So
right.
you can call to deer. You can, you know, whether you're grunting, whether you're rattling, you just need to be in that area. Just find an area that you can access, that deer are frequenting, and that you can cover. It makes sense from a win standpoint. They're going to come, you know, buy, you know, scent checking this betting area, whatever it is. You just need to know which area to hunt. I feel like we get caught up a lot with which trail to be on, this and that. Sometimes it's not a trail. Sometimes it's just get yourself in that area.
Right. I agree 100%. 100%, yes. I've got some buddies who are, oh, this trail, that trail, this trail. And I mean, yes, that tells you the general vicinity, but, you know, and then they get up in the stand. Well, that deer wasn't on the trail. I would have had a shot, but he wasn't on the trail. I'm like, yeah.
No doubt.
Them big deer, a lot of times, they don't just walk down that mud-beaten trail most of the time.
Yeah, that's too easy. That hunting ain't like that, or not where I come from.
Yeah.
But and then, too, when it's, you know, late October, early November, they are running around. They are chasing does. You see deer in areas that you just do not typically see deer. They're just running all sorts, and they're coming up slopes. You're like, why in the world is that deer running the ridge like that? Why are they doing that? And you see a young buck chasing behind them. They're just doing different things, but they're going to, again, be in, you know, this general region, this area.
Certain area. And I know a lot of guys say, well, you can't pattern deer during the rut. But I believe you can pattern an area.
Oh, 100%.
And not all deer are created equal. They've got personalities. Just, there are some that I would agree that, good grief, you can't pattern them. I don't know where they go. I don't know why they do it.
Sure.
And then they come back, and you're like, well, now where in the world were you?
Yeah.
But there are some deer, and by all rights, if you find a target deer that you're after and you know the general area that he frequented last fall and nothing's really changed, don't wait for the trail camera picture. Take what you've learned last year and roll the dice. Plan on being in that area around that same time. That's my opinion.
I totally agree. I totally agree. I've seen it year in, year out, deer just – they're cyclical almost in areas that they want to, let's say patrol. I'm trying to use, you know, terms that people can associate with and kind of understand, but you know, they just are active in that area for a specific reason. But if they do it one year, I'm going to hedge my bets that the next year or the next time, you know, let's say this window, this time frame where I saw them do it last year, if I get similar weather conditions and I want to harvest that deer, I'm going back to that same area. I'm just going to do it.
Oh, definitely.
Because
definitely.
Chances
are
strong. It
took me years to understand that.
Well, yeah. You know, and sometimes it's just, it's sitting back and observing. I think that's the cool thing, too, about, you know, I think there's so much drama, let's say, around harvesting mature deer and this and that and the score of their antlers. And, that, you know, that's fun and all. But I think part of it, the fun, is just saying, hey, I've been able to recognize this deer from when he was 2, then to 3, then to 4.
Right.
And if he gets on above that, that's fantastic, awesome. But now you've got some history with that deer to be able to understand. And my favorite thing about all of the game, if it's a game pretty much at that point, is, one, figuring
Definitely.
Out the game, but just putting these puzzle yeah. pieces together and just saying,
oh, man.
Oh, I see what you're doing there, and I'm
yes.
going to capitalize on it. That is when it comes
Definitely.
Super fun.
Definitely.
And that's why I like chasing older deer, because it's been time to be able to develop those things. You know, we're watching a couple of deer that we've had some history with, and it's just like, as you're just driving around the property and you're seeing, you know, some different strategy and stuff that you're using in this area, and you're like, it is totally plausible. I'm going to hunt this area, you know, during November, and that deer is going to be in here. Like, every single time now I go to that stand or drive by, it's like, it could happen right here at this time frame.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And that's, that's, each deer has a weakness.
Yes.
Or we figure out the weakness, whether, again, that's early, middle, or late. And it's our job to figure out where that weakness is
mm-hmm.
and where we can best capitalize on that. back to Whiplash, this would probably, this is one of the only deer that comes to mind that I feel like I have really have a grasp on what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Summer, winter, fall, summer, fall, winter. I mean, spring. I mean, I've got pictures of stumps coming out of his head. No, right. Because of the, again, the notch.
Sure.
But
sure.
I've probably never gathered more information about one whitetail than I ever have.
Sure. That's so cool.
So he'll probably be the one that gets right through the cracks too.
And give you a whole nother year of information to figure out and record
right.
And log. That's funny.
At that point, we don't care if he comes out a big 8 or 9 year old and he's a spike. We're going after him.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because it's the story that's just developed, man. Well, it's so much fun thinking about all this and like I said, putting all these puzzle pieces together. What else, any other kind of weaknesses that you've identified with Whiplash? We're closing in on an hour or so. And I know you're a busy guy. I don't want to take too much of your time.
Probably, I mean, as far as his main weakness, you know, if he's like he was last year, man, and I don't know how he didn't die. He really participated in the rut last mm-hmm. year, probably more than I've ever seen him do.
Oh, wow.
Via trail cam pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So if he does that again, I mean, I've got a decision to make. I feel like I could go, I feel like I know where he's at right now. Right now, as we speak, I feel like I know the ridge that he's on.
Sure.
I feel like I know that he's either going to head out to the neighbor's clover field
mm-hmm.
or either head down to one of my clover fields tonight. That's what I feel like he's doing. And I feel like I had a good chance to get in if I had good access.
Right.
So I've got a decision to make. Am I going to push the envelope, and am I going to try to hunt him early? I've got two tags in Missouri.
Yep.
Or am I going to maybe fool around with Frank the Tank
mm-hmm.
and let Whiplash get ripe?
Yep.
Let Whiplash, you know, take in all this information I've gathered, and maybe he's going to participate in the rut again like he did last year and be really involved. And if that's the case, I know where to be around November.
Sure.
Or I know where to have my son around November or my wife around November if I've harvested Frank the Tank, because those are the two that are really in my crawl right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of my game plan. And as far as his weakness goes, would definitely probably be the rut. I mean, dude, that deer put his legs on and
covered some ground.
You know, as you well know, we manage a big property mm-hmm. and there were some mornings in November. Wow. I mean, this is in daylight. I'm like, how in the world isn't this deer killed? He was over on the far north corner of across the major highway on this side of it. And now he's back over here before it even, I mean, all in daylight.
Right. That's nuts. That's crazy. Well,
so,
it's so much fun. I try not to get ahead of myself, but there is something special about the November mornings. And
oh man,
I just can't wait for that cool crisp air.
Buddy, me too.
The drive in, all the little giddiness, the little butterflies in your tummy. Oh man, all of it. I can't wait.
Me too, and my family's coming on hunting, so that's kind of where it is for me. And if they harvest it, we've got a lot of hit list bucks,
right.
And mature deer. I mean, a lot of just old deer. So we're going to be after them, and my son gets one of the ones that I've got in my crawl. You know what? I'm going to congratulate him because that's what it's about.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Well, man, that's awesome. We are rapidly approaching season, and I'm pumped. You're pumped, but we got some stuff to do to figure out here. You got a little bit of scouting to do. We've got planning season to get done. You guys are starting tomorrow. We're starting tomorrow. We had rain, shower, move through earlier today. It's just, again, everything is just on a kind of
around the corner.
Around the corner and falling into place really quickly. So I know we'll have you back on here as season starts and probably a couple updates throughout the season. What you're killing, what you're seeing, what the activity is in your area. But man, I certainly appreciate
looking forward to it.
Catching up and getting in a tree with you. That's the other fun stuff. we're gonna have a lot
Definitely.
Of good laughs. Shoot, we already talked about, you know, a week in November. That's like, yep, it's gonna happen that week. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
Exactly.
Well, Seth,
looking
thank you so,
forward to it.
So much for your time.
Hey, you too, Matt. Appreciate you as always.
Absolutely, sir. We'll see ya.
See ya. Bye.
Well, there it is, Seth Harker, the man, the myth, the legend. Appreciate his time as always. Seth has been such a successful hunter here in South Central Missouri. He doesn't really travel anywhere else to whitetail hunt. This is what he calls home, and he spends a lot of time on it and in the field. So just has so many experiences to lean on, and I love kind of hearing his different perspective on things and the way he's been able to capitalize on deer movements and study them and just kind of catalog all this in his brain and make it all make sense on the landscape, actually. So if you guys are, you know, going into season not knowing, you know, what next year looks like, and that sounds crazy, like, oh, don't get ahead of yourself, Matt. We're talking about this season. But it's more or less take a pen and paper with you. You know, put notes on your phone. When you see something, when you're seeing deer do things, make a mental note of that. That information is going to change the way you hunt next year, probably change the way you address your property, and maybe a little couple tweaks here and there. We're steady learning as we're actually transitioning this Prairie Hollow property. Seth has had this farm for a long time, but he is steady learning more and more about it. So you can only do that if you open your eyes, observe in the field, take note of all these observations, trail camera, scouting, hunting, take note of them and capitalize on them for the next year, guys. So as you get into season, just be safe. Hope you guys are able to just enjoy season for what it is. We talk about big deer. We talk about hunting, but what an awesome time to be able to just be quiet and sit still and just be in among nature, watching nature do everything that it does just so delicately, so just incredibly complex, but at the same time, just so simple. And so that's got a lot of lessons in there to be able to teach us. So hope you guys learned so much this season. Again, be safe and look forward to hearing your guys' success as well. So be sure to follow along on social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. And if you guys have success, if you guys have questions, please reach out to us at info@landlegacy.tv. Guys, we'll catch you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Yep.